From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Dan Rabib, senior Washington correspondent for I-24 News, Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, and our moderator, Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. Donald Trump became the first sitting U.S. president to enter North Korea, stepping across the border during a meeting at the demilitarized zone with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. President Trump addressed the nation from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial on America's Independence Day amid a show of military hardware, inserting himself and controversy into the celebration of the national holiday. Iran announced that it had exceeded its low-enriched uranium stockpile limit, violating the amount agreed to hold in the 2015 international deal and sending a pointed message to the Trump administration. Thousands of demonstrators used the 22nd anniversary of Hong Kong's reunification with China to break into the city's legislative building in a massive protest that drew the ire of party leaders in Beijing. And the situation at the U.S. southern border continues to deteriorate as U.S. lawmakers visited detention facilities to view the conditions, and the Department of Homeland Security began investigating a report that current and former U.S. Border Patrol agents are part of a Facebook group posting racist, sexist, and violent posts about migrants and Latin American lawmakers. Panelists, welcome, and hope you had a wonderful holiday. Trump entering North Korea. Donald Trump became the first sitting U.S. president to enter the North Korea, stepping across the border, across the demilitarized zone. He shook hands with Kim at a border village and then walked across the demarcation line. Some are warning that this is a dangerous sign of raising the status of a brutal dictator, while others say that this is a necessary step to creating a trust with North Korea for future negotiations. Dan, I'll start with you. I found it interesting about how the meeting was arranged, not your typical diplomatic situation.
Very, very personal style, which is what Donald Trump has, of course, but he was in that part of the world. He was in Japan for the Group of 20 summit, and he wrote on Twitter, "I'm supposed to go to South Korea tomorrow. Wouldn't it be a really neat idea if I went to the border, the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, and Kim Jong-un would come from the capital of North Korea, and we'd shake hands at the border, just shake hands." That's kind of what the tweet said. It was very casual, it seemed. To all appearances, North Korea liked the idea, and so Kim, you know, took the trip. We don't know, at least I don't know, if in the background, in fact, more standard and conventional things happened where officials had to talk. Clearly, the Secret Service had to talk to some security guards and arrange it, etc., but it looked like an instant idea. In other words, it looked like a TV show, like an episode of The Apprentice or something, the show that Donald Trump used to host. And he loves that kind of event. I mean, if you just think about the various things he did during the week, including here in Washington, D.C., but that one at the start of the week, like, wow, what's the political impact? It just tells me that the process of Trump still trying to charm North Korea into making a nuclear agreement continues. There were two summits, one in Singapore, one in Hanoi. The one in Hanoi early this year apparently failed, but Trump really wanted to keep that effort alive, and so he used the personal approach to do so, and both sides say that committees now will restart talks.
Tracy.
Yes, I think the most important thing, again, once again we saw Trump giving Kim Jong-un an incredible publicity goal, you know, own goal. This is very good for Kim at home. He again looks like he's at the status of a world leader and a nuclear power, frankly. I think the best thing that can come from this is if the two sides do actually start to negotiate, which they haven't yet, really. There haven't been serious talks. So if this is a reset and the two sides do sit down, they've agreed to appoint working committees, the U.S. already has an envoy to do this, that could be a good thing, a positive outcome. However, even within the administration, there are differences on how to deal with North Korea, and these divisions became very clear after this meeting. There are some in Trump's administration, like John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, who does not want to negotiate with North Korea at all, while others, including Trump himself, want a deal. So we'll have to see, but the important thing is that after 2 years, they're really just at square one.
Tracy, isn't it true, however, that the Trump administration may no longer demand full denuclearization, that North Korea give up its nuclear bombs and its potential, and there could be a compromise. That would be very different from what Donald Trump demanded at first.
Oh, indeed. No, they have rolled back their demands quite a bit. Since January, the main envoy has been saying that this is actually going to have to be more of a step-by-step reciprocal process, although they don't like to use that word. So it is very possible there will be an interim deal that, yes, that allows Kim to keep his nukes for now as they continue to talk. Officially, they're still demanding disarmament, but clearly, they're willing to settle for less.
I'll throw back that John Bolton did push back on that story, saying that there was no truth to it, but it was New York Times reporting that said that there was some...
That the U.S. may have gone softer. Well,
that there was some sort of public comments
to that effect. So yeah. I don't think it's just that story. I think we've seen signs, as I say, all year.
I would say this. When you have the U.S. negotiating with North Korea on this level, and I refer to Iran, what does it say about Iran's nuclear ambitions? We're going to talk about that later, when you have the two situations which seem to be somewhat similar, being treated so differently.
Well, yes. Well, the president is trying to reach out to Iran's leaders, suggesting that he would sit down with the Ayatollah's government as well. And he has predicted, Donald Trump has predicted, that Iran will come to the U.S. to negotiate. Trump thinks that he is strangling Iran's economy to such an extent that Iran will want a new deal. And that deal, the Trump administration has said, would not only be about nuclear weapons and that Iran will never develop them, but also limiting their long-range missiles and also Iran's behavior. How's that measurable, etc.? And would Iran ever really change its, quote, behavior of supporting various Shiite Muslim movements and groups that we certainly consider to be terrorist groups. But Trump thinks that he can charm the Iranians. That charm offensive hasn't achieved any results yet.
Well, we see China, North Korea, Iran. We've seen the charm offensive type of diplomacy by Trump with all three of those nations during the past 7 to 10 days. Can the administration point to a success on any level? I open that up to both of you. A clear win with using that policy.
I don't see a clear win. I mean, they're talking. China and the United States are talking. For now, there's sort of a freeze in that trade war. Perhaps there will be some progress there. What's interesting about Iran and the message they may take from this is that you're better off having a nuclear bomb than not, because they don't have a nuclear bomb, Iran. North Korea does,
right.
And North Korea is getting the, you know, the star treatment, and Iran is being, you know, punished and sanctioned. And so one message, and that's dangerous, a message from this is that Iran may be saying, hey, we better go ahead and develop a bomb, and then we'll get more respect.
It would seem to incentivize them to want to continue their nuclear program rather than to halt or diminish it.
Well, that fits into one of your headline stories of the week, that President Hassan Rouhani of Iran said that we are going to exceed the limits from the nuclear accord of the year 2015. We're not just going to enrich low-enriched uranium more, a quantity greater than the treaty allowed, or the accord allowed, but in addition, we're going to enrich uranium to even more powerful degrees, whatever it is we want. And in your headline, you said that's a message to the U.S., but I think everyone needs to understand it's a message to the European countries that signed on to the nuclear accord, Britain, France, and Germany. I would just put it this way. Iran wants the Europeans to help get around U.S. economic sanctions, to save Iran's economy. I think that's President Rouhani's demand. Would he really proceed to this enrichment level? We're starting to hear military threats, for instance, from Israel, if Iran would dare to do that.
I think we're hearing military threats from the president of the United States as well, who's saying that Iran is playing with fire, this sort of thing.
They'll be obliterated if they attack us.
Familiar rhetoric.
The Europeans have tried to create a mechanism to get around U.S. sanctions, but it's really hard to try to do trade outside of a U.S.-dominated global financial system.
Yeah.
So, but you still have Russia and China, who are also signatories to the nuclear deal.
But they seem to take Iran's side. They've said
both
of them, China and Russia, said it's regrettable that Iran has announced it's going to exceed the limits, in effect break the accord of 2015. But both China and Russia blamed the United States for stirring up the tension, for walking away from the deal and adding new sanctions.
What the Iranians are saying, actually, is that they have not breached the deal because anytime there is a dispute about what has happened, you haven't breached the deal until there is a meeting that says, that investigates and discovers. So they're saying that, well, maybe we did, maybe we didn't, but we haven't officially breached it until we have the meeting that says that. Very legalistic, very nitpicky and inside baseball. But, you know, again, I think it's a matter of message sending on both sides. And I agree with you that is a strong message to the Europeans that they need to be on point in brokering this deal.
And the European governments really want to preserve the nuclear accord. But, you know, there are Trump administration officials who say this is the decision for Britain, France, and Germany. Are you going to work with the U.S.? Or are you going to work with Iran? The White House claims it's giving Europe a choice. It's not really that stark, but that's the way they're putting it.
Are we closer today to open conflict between the United States and Iran?
Well, yes, we are, compared with a few weeks ago. But the nuclear reason is just part of the picture, that Iran might be enriching more uranium, and that's seen as dangerous or a violation. But, of course, the situation in the Arabian or Persian Gulf, with the threat, with the attacks on shipping, with the U.S. and others saying that Iran or Iranian-backed forces attacked some of the oil tankers that were in that very important shipping lane.
And with Iran shooting down a U.S. drone.
Where President Trump said that he decided, in fact, to attack a target in Iran in response to Iran shooting down a drone. And then when he learned that probably 150 Iranians would die, he said, no, that's not worth it. That's not reciprocal. So I think there he was trying, again, kind of to be a nice guy. Iran, wouldn't you rather negotiate? Mm-hmm. Again, so far, no results. But let's keep in mind one other thing. When negotiations have occurred between the U.S. and Iran, they've always started secretly in other places like Geneva, Switzerland, or Oman. So we don't know everything going on.
Very important point. Again, is the diplomatic corps actually activated and working within this administration?
Oh, Tracy, that's your beat. Is the diplomatic corps doing anything complicated?
It's always a question mark because I think the State Department has been so sidelined in so many foreign policy issues that it is a big question mark to what extent they are involved. They're certainly not so involved in the Middle East, the Israeli-Palestinian Mideast peace process. Many of the veteran State Department employees, diplomats, foreign service officers have left or been driven out of the department.
We're going to take a break right there, and then we'll be back with more Issues in the News.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now, back to our panel, Dan Raviv, Senior Washington Correspondent for I-24 News, Tracy Wilkinson, Correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, and our moderator is Michael Williams, Contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome back. President Trump changed the commemoration of America's Independence Day a little bit this year. The 4th of July commemorates America's Declaration of Independence from Britain and the establishment of the United States as an independent nation. Presidents in modern times have chosen to mark America's birthday by participating in very small, quiet events apart from the main celebration, which takes place in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall. Trump chose to do it very differently, incorporating a military parade, a speech that lasted much longer than I thought it would, military flyovers and the like. Also with you, Tracy, he did it very, very differently, and I think we know why, but I'd still like to hear you say it.
Well, I'm not sure what you want me to say, however. There was a lot of concern that he would turn this into one big political campaign rally, as most of his public appearances tend to be. He refrained somewhat from the partisan rhetoric, yet he did sort of festoon himself in the trappings of patriotism. And I'm sure we will see scenes from this in his campaign ads. Even people from the military were concerned that he was using them, the military, as props. And that he did, and I think that's where the fallout is. Again, Trump does things his own way, and this was yet another example.
Do you think this would have happened, Dan, if John Kelly and H.R. McMaster were still in the administration?
Well, frankly, yes. I mean, you're thinking of the previous chiefs of staff in the Trump White House. President Trump is the one who decides what to do, but especially when it comes to these kind of made-for-television events. The president likes optics. And so it's sort of well known that he was in Paris and he was at a Bastille Day parade nearly 2 years ago. And he really liked that military parade on the Champs-Élysées. And he said, why don't we do that in Washington? And so he has wanted to do that. One version of that was basically scrubbed because it was going to be too expensive. And so he got around to this version that people gather anyway. on the 4th of July, America's birthday, on the National Mall. So why doesn't he create a little television event at one end of the mall? Now, actually, at local time, it was at 6:30 p.m. for about an hour. Usually nothing goes on then. The fireworks show was later at 9 p.m. after sunset. So it was an extra event that required extra security. Some people thought it was bad taste that he ordered that tanks be parked in front of the Lincoln Memorial. To some, that looks like some military takeover of Washington, D.C., but he was framing the whole event as a salute to America's military. Again, people said, why on July 4th? And so his long, somewhat droning speech for about an hour was a history of the military, punctuated by flyovers, aircraft of the various military services going overhead. It rained. People did come, not in massive numbers. I bet you he wasn't that satisfied with the outcome.
Probably not. But
it didn't look great.
Yeah, one of the criticisms is that the 4th of July does not commemorate the United States military victory. It commemorates the Declaration of Independence, democracy.
The beginning of
yes.
The idea of America, not
exactly,
the power
the
of
ideals,
America.
Ideals that some argue Trump is not always respecting. So one of the criticisms was that he's emphasizing the wrong thing.
Whoever wrote his speech did say that the military in war after war from 1776 till now has been fighting for values and freedom and defeating ISIS recently and that sort of thing. Now, he's entitled to say what he wants to say. He's the commander-in-chief. He's the elected president. He had this event. It cost, I guess, a few million dollars. I don't think there was any harm. His critics, again, say really bad taste, very narcissistic, simply about him. His supporters apparently kind of liked it, but as I say, no big harm.
Did anyone else have a problem or an issue with the fact that a president, a person who has spent considerable time and money avoiding military service, was sort of wrapping himself in the flag and in patriotism and in the military. My reaction in watching it, there was even a call, there was a recruitment call during the speech for people, you should join the military.
A quick reminder, in his defense, he has recently explained why he didn't serve during the Vietnam War in the 1970s. He didn't admit that anything about his medical excuse was false, but he said, I didn't like that war. Knowing that in general, Americans think Vietnam was bad.
Not sure that makes me feel any better about it. Not sure that makes me feel any better about it. But again, that was an issue that I had. I wanted to talk about the general wisdom of politicizing these types of events, because it wasn't a political speech. It wasn't. I think at worst, it could have been a campaign rally.
He didn't
certainly
slam
did not,
the Democrats.
Did not turn into that at all. But isn't there a fact that anytime a president shows up at an event like this, because we do have a two-party system, it is politics. He's elected by political process, that it kind of his presence turns it into a political event, which is why most presidents stay away in the first place.
Oh, well, a better event would be if the Democrats, who are among the leaders of Congress, would also be there, as well as the Republican who is the president, in some united event. But this is what, I mean, our listeners around the world need to know this. It's a very divided country right now. Politics here intrude on absolutely everything.
I don't think Democrats were invited. And if they had been, I'm not sure they would have gone.
And then this is a point. But the creation of the division. Let's move on to the protests in Hong Kong. 12 arrests have been made following protests in Hong Kong, where demonstrators stormed the legislative building to protest Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam and a proposed extradition law. Dan, I'll start with you. Were you surprised by the intensity of the protest? I was surprised by the intensity of it.
Well, I've been in Hong Kong. And
I lived there for 5 years.
Ah, there you are. So since the handover to Chinese administration, and it's been uncomfortable now for a bit over 20 years, where there's a promise of two systems that Hong Kong, in effect, could keep some of its freedoms that it had under British rule. And so I think this has been boiling under the surface. And so someone in Beijing decided to try something strong. Let's have an extradition law that anyone who's convicted of a crime in Hong Kong might be sent to a Chinese prison.
Or accused of a crime and then tried in China.
Yeah,
in
Beijing. I mean, it's a shocker to anyone in Hong Kong. And so I think Beijing was trying it to see how Hong Kong would react. Boy, they saw.
Yeah. Hey, got an answer. Yeah, very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think they're seeing that the Chinese government right now is becoming increasingly authoritarian and much more restrictive. And so I think people in Hong Kong are sort of in a bit of a panic about that. One point I wanted to make is that you have not heard any kind of great voice of support from the Trump administration for the Hong Kong protesters. You know, here's a glowing example of democracy in action, and you've not heard any support from this administration.
Right. Trump didn't praise them. He was asked once about them. Right. He said, oh, what a shame, like he doesn't like disorder in the streets.
Exactly. And I think, again, that is his friendship with President Xi, that he does not want to say anything that will offend his buddy.
His buddy, yeah, exactly. Let's move to the situation at the U.S. southern border. Members of the U.S. Congress saw firsthand the conditions at the detention centers. The Border Patrol is investigating reports that current and former Border Patrol agents are part of this Facebook group that are posting very vile types of posts about migrants and U.S. lawmakers of Latin American heritage. Dan, I'll start with you. The conditions that we saw there and the response by the lawmakers was quite strong.
Okay, a couple of things. Again, huge political divisiveness over this issue as well. About that Facebook group, a private group where apparently hundreds of people who work for the Border Patrol Agency, CBP, Customs and Border Protection, take part in their off hours. They write nasty things. They mock the migrants. They're racists, etc. There's a promise from the agency, CBP, that they will be disciplined. It's unacceptable. So we'll see. In the world of social networking and the internet, that happens. People write obnoxious, terrible things. Those people have been arriving in very large numbers, sometimes 100,000 per month this year. And here's the political division part. Democrats in Congress have been visiting the facilities in Texas and Florida and saying that the conditions are horrible. The word from the Trump administration is, well, and President Trump even tweeted this, if the migrants don't like the conditions, they should stop coming. And in many cases, he wrote, for these migrants, the conditions in the facilities are much better than what they have in their home countries. So he's rejecting all the complaints, and he's trying to send a message, just stop coming, problem solved, don't come to America. The Democrats, including those running for president, more than 20 men and women, they assume that Democrat voters, liberals, will care about the migrants. Frankly, President Trump assumes that his base doesn't care about the migrants and wants them to stay away. It's like take the same set of facts and the two sides read them totally differently.
Yeah, there's not caring about, and then there's open contempt for.
You see it when President Trump has belittled amnesty claims, saying that they're all a crock and they're fake. And I've spent a lot of time in Central America, and I know the conditions these people are fleeing. And I think they have, I think in many cases, very legitimate claims. But I think the more important thing here is that while Trump is saying, well, go back to where you came from, he's cutting money, U.S. aid, to those countries. So, you know, everyone says, and this is true, and we lose sight of it, that the root causes, you know, the factors that push people need to be addressed. El Salvador had one of the highest homicide rates in the world, and through U.S. aid and improving the police forces, they've actually brought down that homicide rate.
Dan, President Trump takes a unique view of it. Absolutely. Previous American presidents realized they or felt they had to give foreign aid to those countries. We're talking especially about El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And President Trump says those countries aren't helping us at all. I'm cutting off the money. Now, recent indications, by the way, are that the money may start flowing again because the president has openly thanked and praised the government of Guatemala for doing something. So now he may be willing to pay money again or give money.
And
of course, he's praising Mexico. Only about a month ago, he was threatening tariffs on all products made in Mexico unless Mexico helps stop the migrants. Now President Trump has decided to announce Mexico is doing a lot because I pushed them.
If you have the Democrats and they seem to be taking an open borders type of position. When you listen to them sort of tangentially, you don't really hear anything other than open borders. They're not really coming up with a solution for the problem. They're saying that the conditions are deplorable, and I think anybody can objectively see that. But if they don't come up with a solution for this problem, is that potentially a death knell for
that may be noticed during the presidential election campaign next year when it's one Democrat against Donald Trump. And Donald Trump will keep hitting them on that notion that Democrats want open borders, meaning that they want crime. They don't want to enforce the laws. They won't change the laws. He'll keep hitting the Democrats. But right now, the candidates for the White House, they think if they're a Democrat, that the best thing to do is to say we want to be nice to the migrants. We don't want to have roundups. We don't want to have the arrests that are currently being threatened by President Trump. That helps you win the nomination. Later, you move toward the center. That's the way politics usually works here.
Absolutely right. That's all the time that we have for this week. Thanks to Dan Revive, senior Washington correspondent for I-24 News, and Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. This program is produced by VOA's Kim Lewis. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites, and I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.